Broadcasting from Orchard Park, New York,
and Boca Raton, Florida,
it's the Freight 360 Podcast. From freight broker sales tips to sports talk, this podcast is all about helping you grow as a freight broker. We're your hosts, Nate Cross
and Benjamin Kowalski.
Let's talk freight. Welcome back for another edition of The Final Mile. We're going to answer five listener questions today. And again, I'll give my final disclaimer that regardless of the title or thumbnail of this video or podcast, we are answering five questions. So if we don't get to the one in the title or the thumbnail first, we will get to it. But please take a moment, support this channel by checking out the sponsors in the description box. And please head to our website, freight360.net. Check out the Freight Broker Basics course for a full training on how to get started and succeed in the industry and all of our other content that's out there as well. And do the whole like, subscribe, share it, comment, all that good stuff. We appreciate it.
And to your point, if there's a question you want to hear, or if you don't like our answer, feel free to complain in the comments because it helps with engagement and we'll be happy to debate with you. So absolutely. Have at it.
We got a lot of, we've had a bunch of people that assuming they're on the carrier or the dispatch side that don't like our answers on certain things, but you know, we're trying to give objective feedback on a lot of this stuff and just share our experience, and we'll do our best to continue to do that. Our first question came via email, and he asked, when I'm dealing with a shipper, how is the rate determined? Is it based off of the mileage, the amount of pallets, the amount of loads that they move per week, etc.? So it's going to depend on, it could be all of the above, right? So we've got I think we did a recent episode on pricing, like how to quote and price in the spot market. So we'll try to have this as a condensed answer, but you've got to really find out what is most important to your customer. And that's typically going to determine the rate, right? If they're price sensitive, then the rate's going to be impacted by that, right? Cheaper is going to be the most important thing. If it's a time sensitive thing, you've got flexibility in your rate. If and to give a basic answer, because he did bring up mileage, your customer might have they might just say, here's the rate, it's all in, or here's our scheduled rate per mile with our fuel surcharge for the next 3 months. We're telling you what our rate is. So it really depends on the situation, but it could be all of the above. What would you add to that, Ben?
I would say, like, so very simply, right? Like, your rate is going to be based on the things that they mentioned, right? So it is going to be based on the mileage driven, right? So you can use DAT to see what that whole lane, right? Call it Houston and New York. What is the average rate to pay to ship from there to there, full truckload, 42,000 pounds, right? In a van, right? Now you can also see your rate per mile. So if, for instance, like your load is a little shorter or it doesn't have the same mileage, like you can reduce the rate by the rate per mile, right? So if Houston to Pittsburgh is $2.20 a mile, but your load delivers 100 miles short of Pittsburgh, then like you can take the rate per mile and minus that times 100 miles to bring it down. So real specifically, like definitely mileage matters, right? Second thing is, pallet count does and it doesn't, meaning like if it is a dedicated truck, meaning your customer is saying, I am paying you for a truck, only my cargo goes in this truck, no one other customer goes in this truck, then like you're basically using that rate, right? Like yep. There's not really up or down. Now, if your customer says, I don't care if it's dedicated, we're okay with a partial, or they might even mistakenly call it LTL, but it's not really LTL, but they call it that because it's just not a full truckload. Now in that scenario, right, like again, Houston to Pittsburgh, just for round numbers, say that rate was $3,000, but your customer says like, I only have, you know, 14 pallets and it's only 15 or 18,000 pounds. So it's literally half of that truckload, right? If you are going to book a partial, you can charge your customer basically half of the truckload rate plus your margin. And hopefully you can find another customer that also needs their freight for the other half of the truck. They would pay half that rate.
Yep.
That is like specifically about the only time you really get into pallet count to change your rate is if it's in a partial load.
Partial.
But for full truckload, that doesn't really matter at all. Most of, to your point, you're going to have a rate that is suggested by your shipper in most cases, that's probably not exactly what they would be willing to pay if push come to shove, but like that's what they want to pay.
Yeah, it's their wish list price. Yeah.
Correct. And then you've got two choices, right? Like, hey, I can either work my best to try to get them a truck for what they're asking for. Obviously, it's got to be a little below so you can get paid for finding the truck. And then I usually suggest you go back to the shipper and say, hey, look, know your target was 16, really did my best. Best I could get you was 1750. Would that work for you? In most of those case scenarios, you can get the extra $100 maybe and be able to make it work for the shipper.
Yeah. The other factor too, weight can definitely have an impact, right? Lighter loads burn less fuel, yes. Heavier loads burn more fuel. So that's going to have a lesser impact, obviously, than your distance, but that does.
Volume's impact. A big one too, right? Like we were doing this yesterday and I'll give you an example. We have a shipper that ships potatoes in California and they're shipping spot loads up to, I think it's like Kent, Washington from LA, right? So those spot loads, right? They were paying somewhere around, I think, 1600 or 1700. That is, load came in today. We need it shipped out today. We got to pay what the going spot rate is, was like 17. But they also said, we will have 10 loads a day starting next week for 3 months. We want to pay like 1600. We'll give you all 10 loads every day if you can get us closer to 16. Well, they're giving us more freight and they want a discount. That's the trade-off. We do the same thing with the carriers. And we're talking to carriers that are already interested in that lane because they either have customers or other lanes. And we're just like, hey, look, I know you guys are probably at 17 or 18 for a day of or a spot load. Do you have any interest in some volume? And if they say yes, then the next question is like, look, I've got access to 10 loads a day for 3 months. If that would work for you and you've got the capacity and want to take it on, this is where I would need us to be. And you kind of work down from the spot load to the higher volumes. And the higher the volume, the more you can come down, the less the volume, the less.
For sure. That's exactly right. Volume discount, what it comes down to.
Yep.
All right. Next up, what do I do if a shipper doesn't want to talk to me when I call them? I like this question because you're going to get, I'm going to generalize this because basically any objection would fall into this category, right? So I think what you have to do is determine what, like specifically, why don't they want to talk to you? If it's just that they're busy, well, yeah, if you call them at a bad time, then just call them at a later time. That's what you would do. But if you're getting an objection like, oh, we don't use brokers or our customers, it's customer routed or FOB, they'll call it. Or they might say, we're happy with our current provider, right? They just say something to try to get you off the phone. I think this is like a normal part of prospecting. And what do you do is you want to find out more information. You have to prospect. You got to ask some questions. And granted, the way in which you do this and the finesse of it could either work out and get you more information, or if you aren't very crafted at this skill, you could get hung up on. And a lot of people early on will, because they're reading off a script. They don't really know what they're talking about. And it's just all part of the learning curve. But you want to find out more information. So if they give you the quick, oh, our freight's customer routed, all right, you don't just say, okay, bye. Say, oh, that's great. You don't have to ever deal with any of the issues with truck fallouts and all that stuff, do you? And they might say, every now and then, or they might keep bluffing you, right? But the reality is you got to continue to ask questions. There's so many scenarios here, we can't go through all of them, but ask questions, find out more information, and try to uncover what's really going on. What do you think?
Yeah, you definitely need more information, right? And like, again, an analogy or metaphor, right, is think back to maybe when you were younger in high school and you had a crush on whoever it was in school, right? If they said no the first time you asked, like, did you really quit? Or did you maybe try to make friends with their friends? Did you try to find activities that you had in common? Did you maybe go and suddenly get an interest in basket weaving because the girl or guy you liked loves doing that thing, whatever that is, right? Like, there are lots of ways that if you want something, you will try to find a way to get what that is, right? Ever since you're a little kid, right? It's very much the same here. Like, yeah, they're always going to play defense. There's lots of people calling them to ask them to do business. That's what you should expect. You should expect them to be busy and not need to talk to you. It's our job as a sales professional to create that need or interest to even talk at first. And then once you can get them to start talking, build on that to hopefully work towards trust to maybe find an opportunity somewhere in the future, right? It is never going to be when you first reach them. It's also baby steps between somebody you've met and never talked to and getting working towards somewhere where you're able to actually connect in on any topic to be able to just have a conversation before you're ever going to be able to do business. That's the job of sales. That's why it pays so much, why so many people quit, because it's hard and it's emotionally taxing to do this, right? Human beings do not like rejection. I mean,
for sure.
Let's be honest, nobody does.
And I know a lot of our listeners are in offices with multiple people around them. So here's something to look at too. If you do sales meetings, which you should periodically, and you go through, let's say there's five of you on a sales team, and everyone's doing the exact same or roughly the same amount of activity, phone calls, new leads, et cetera. If one person is getting this issue of no one wants to talk to me, but the others are having success, well, then you've got to look inward, right? Because the issue is not the customers. The issue is probably some approach that you're doing, the things that you're saying. It could literally be the tone of your voice or just you're an abrasive person. Like there's a lot of different factors here that could be caused by you, which the good thing is you can change those, right?
Exactly. And it's funny, right? I think more about that than probably anything I've learned in my entire adult life, which is human beings have a tendency to look outside of their responsibility for a cause that's upsetting them, whatever it is. This isn't working. It's their fault. It's this fault. It's the market. It's the phone. It's the company, right? But rarely do we ever go, what could I have done differently to maybe have had a different outcome? Because to your point, that's the most important thing. If it is true that it's any of these other things but me, I can't fix them anyway, first of all. So what's the point of worrying about it? Second of all, it only makes me feel better for a minute and I'm back in the same place. You really want to spend time self-evaluating what you're saying, right? And it's so common in sales, right? Every time I've ever had even somebody that worked for me or coached in the scenario where they're like, I keep getting the same objection, right? I keep running into the same thing. I don't understand it. And we've pulled their calls to listen to them. They are saying the same thing before that objection every single time that is cueing the person to say that. They're literally leading the person they're calling into wanting to give them that objection, right? And again, they think it's the other person. And the reality is what they said is what initiated the objection in the first place, right?
Yep.
The responsibility for all of this lies with ourselves and just looking at what we could do, not even better, just differently to see if you get a different result. Just try changing it and move left, maybe move right if you've been moving right. Say this instead of this. Change it up and just look at what is happening in your results. And I guarantee you, you'll start to see which is working and which wasn't working.
Yeah. And I'll lastly add in on this. We talked about recently the, I think it was 15% was the year over year decrease in revenue for freight brokers, right? So whether the market's down or the market's up, if your business volumes are not commensurate with, or if they're not in line with what the market's doing, then it's an external factor. A lot of people lately are blaming the market, but if the market's down 15% from last year, but your numbers are cut in half, that is not the market. That's partially the market.
Exactly.
But a lot of it is probably it's harder to sell. And the seasoned freight brokers that have been doing this for a while and are good at it, they're the ones being able to take in addition. They're probably growing, right? Like we had two record months last year.
Yep.
In a down market, right? You know, it's insane.
People doing the fundamental things that we talk about on the show are still succeeding because you don't need the whole market to go up or down to win or lose. Like you could have a tremendously profitable
get you where you need
crumbs,
to be.
Yeah. Right? Crumbs of these things, right? And again, like I also think that sales is a great place to learn this. Like we should do the show again on prospecting with a purpose. But like the other thing you learn doing this is that negative feeling when you get rejected that everybody wants to avoid altogether, right? And thinks it's just a terrible thing is also a positive because that's your feedback. That's what's telling you, your body telling you you're uncomfortable with what you're hearing. Your body's picking up that you said something that made them say something that you shouldn't do again. That's why you're uncomfortable. So it's an incredibly fast learning curve if you're listening and paying attention to what is happening, right? Like that's what helps me get up to speed again when I haven't prospected for a while. I'll make 60 calls in a day and I can feel when I'm saying the wrong thing because I'm getting different responses. Like I can feel the tension is there. I can feel I'm not getting this like happy feeling from them or this connection. I'm like, oh, I forgot I didn't do this. Oh, I completely just didn't remember I need to be saying this here, right? And again, that feedback is what helps you improve. So you want to be listening to whatever it is that is happening that you're not okay with and then look back at what you said right before that and see if you can just shift that, because that's how you improve in anything.
Yeah, for sure. There's I think every person has some sort of like pet peeve or like ick that they can't stand. Yep. And for me, like as a consumer, right, we'll kind of like turn the table here. As a consumer, I cannot stand a know-it-all, like a sales rep that like just, they may not even be trying to do this, but they're just a know-it-all and make it sound like they are way above me. I was on a call yesterday. I won't say the company's name, but I did a demo, or I had a call with a TMS provider for our brokerage. We have talked with, you know, I'm not looking to get a new TMS right now, but they had cold stopped in the office at our corporate office. My assistant had a meeting with them, and I hopped on this one. 20 minutes into this like presentation, this like slide deck, I'm messaging my assistant. I'm like, what is this guy talking about? Like, what are we doing here? Like, he hasn't asked a single question about our company. He doesn't even know what our needs are, what we do. He's just pitching all this stuff. It's irrelevant to us. Like, he's saying it in a way that he's an expert. So I pull him up on LinkedIn. He's been there for 7 months. And I'm like, this guy was never in freight before that. But anyway, so like the know-it-all thing comes off as abrasive. I've seen that in sales and retail too, where people just, they try to sell something. And what they don't know is that the consumer is like actually super knowledgeable about it. And oftentimes your customer might be super smart about it, which is why you should be asking them questions rather than shoving stuff down their throat.
Here's the other thing too. And I'll give you like a real world personal example where I learned this about myself, and it's related to what you just said, right? My wife and I would be having conversations, and she would say something that was like, you know, she learned or that was interesting that she wanted to share with me, right? And I love hearing these things, right? But also my personality is that like, if it's a topic that I'm also interested in, which is a good conversation, right? I'm really excited to share back with her what else I know about it, because like, that's just kind of like my MO, right? Like, I just want to help. And I'm like, yeah, that is fantastic. And did you hear this? And it used to frustrate her. And she told me this even recently, like, it felt like I was one-upping, or felt like in a sense that like I needed to show that I also knew. And I don't, maybe that is part of also my psyche that I need to work on, but it was a good reminder that even though I believed and felt I was being helpful to further both of our conversations so that we could both keep talking, it doesn't always feel the same way you think it is to the other person.
Yeah.
And that's what you've got to be listening for and hear the feedback and then adjust, right? Because now I'm aware, because again, I'm sure I do this in sales calls and in meetings and in negotiations all the same. I probably do it with you, right? Like, is I get used to doing this with you. And even in the show where we build on what we're talking about and move, that's not always perceived the same way by different audiences and in different contexts.
Yeah. The one-upper mentality. I used to have a buddy, I know we're going off tangent, but I used to have a buddy back in the day that we're not friends anymore. He got very annoying, but he was a one-upper. Like, I would be like, oh, dude, did you hear about, you know, so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. He's like, that's nothing. My buddy Jimmy.
Let me tell you about
same thing twice. And I'm like, okay, never mind. Good stuff. All right, next question. How do you build and maintain successful relationships with carriers? This is good.
Very good. So
what I would say is a lot of brokers tend to think that the, you know, priority number one is customer, shipper, right? The reality is carriers are just as important, right? And oftentimes they're more important because depending on the market, like if you go back 2-3 years ago, you could get a lot of customers to talk to you because they had problems. They couldn't get trucks. Carriers were like the hot commodity. Yep. So, but in any market, what I would always, my quick tip, and then I'll let you give your insight, is anytime you talk to a carrier, say they're calling on a posted load or something like that, even if they're not a fit, try to get some nugget of information out of them, right? Find out preferred lane, fleet size, equipment type, something, right? Store that, have access to search it. And having that quick little 20-30 second conversation can go a long way, because when you're the one that asks those questions, they're going to remember that and be like, oh, he actually cared to ask me what was important to me, even though he didn't have a load to give me. So that's my quick take on it.
I think the last point is what I always feel is like one of the most important, right? Ask more questions. If you are making statements, you aren't learning. And if you really want to know how to build a relationship with any person in any situation, you first need to know what is important to the other person, not just you, right? And the only way to do that is to ask questions. And for a carrier, there are lots of things that they're looking for that you can help them with. What other routes do you move? What other lanes are important to you? One of my favorite questions to build better relationships with my carriers, and a lot of my carriers, like, they have become good friends. Like, I text them, I talk to them, I talk to them about things outside of trucking because we've built these types of relationships. And it's finding out what else they're looking for and then going and prospecting it for them sometimes, right? Like, I can't tell you how many of my carriers right now are telling me which lanes they need. They email them to me every day. I write them down, and that helps me with my prospecting calls. Because you know that line that you always laugh about, like, I've got trucks in the area? It's horseshit a lot of the time. But if my carrier is telling me, look, I would love to be working with this facility. I've been there years ago. We would love to be doing business with them. I will call that facility on behalf of the carrier. And that's what I'm going to say. Yeah. Everyone goes, how do you open a cold call? What am I going to say that's going to make them interested? I'm calling them with the truth. Hey, I'm reaching out. There's a carrier I've been working with for years. They're right up the road from you. They've got a yard. They got a warehouse, 20 units. I know you guys aren't looking for help right now, but I want to introduce myself because I'd love to be able to talk to you maybe throughout the year and see if anything opens up. That's all I got to say, right? That is an easy opening for me. It helps them tremendously. And it's mutually beneficial for all three of us if the shipper decides to work. So there are a lot of simple things you can do that make your life easier and help you build a better relationship if you spend the time to ask these questions and not treat them like they're transactional, throwaway, you know, resources that you could just find another whenever.
Absolutely. Oh, that's good. All right. Next up, is LinkedIn Sales Navigator worth it? I have never used Sales Navigator. I use LinkedIn Premium, and I have had friends that have used Sales Navigator and liked it. I think LinkedIn is
there was a difference. I didn't know there was a premium that wasn't Sales Navigator.
Yeah. I think like Sales Navigator is more expensive. But either way, Sales Navigator essentially adds CRM functionality into your LinkedIn.
Yes.
So if I would say this, LinkedIn's a great tool. And I highly recommend you at a minimum get like the premium version where you can see like three connections out versus I think if you just have the free one, you're limited. Because to build your network up and to be able to see where contacts work, where they live, their picture, their title, all that stuff, that is extremely, extremely beneficial.
Yes.
At a low cost, be able to get information about you know, a contact at a prospective shipper. If you want to add CRM functionality in there, Sales Navigator sounds like it's an option. I will say, I think there's better CRMs to use. And that's actually our next question. We'll get to in a second. I've never used Sales Navigator, but I definitely love the premium version. What's your experience with LinkedIn and take on it?
I've used it a lot. And then I've used it not at all. In fact, I canceled it again 2 weeks ago. Here's where I think it's valuable, right? Like, so for some industries, it is, I think, more beneficial. Some ways it helps you sometimes connect with higher people in a company quicker. What you tend to not see on LinkedIn and where I think it's not valuable is like most of shippers, like, and the points of contact we need to connect with, procurement or the people tendering loads, like boots on the ground dealing with trucks. Like they usually have a profile on LinkedIn, but not always. Second of all, like they're usually younger in their career, so they don't have as many connections. And third of all, they're rarely networking to improve their job performance. Meaning like if I am in the job where I deal with trucks all day, me meeting more connections on LinkedIn doesn't make me more valuable at my company because they're not in sales, right? Like they're not in business development. So they're not as active I've seen on LinkedIn, meaning like there's not as much activity, but they're there. And where I think it's really valuable to your point though, is if you're prospecting a company and you spoke to somebody, the first thing you should do is try to add them as a connection. Just very simply, short little message. Hey, it was nice connecting with you. Wish you the best. If you need something, here's another way to connect with me. Because every time you add one of them, it's another touch point for one. Two, they're added to your network, which means their network can see you and them and that connection. And it is one more place to create, again, another impression with maybe this potential person at this shipper. So definitely valuable, but I think spamming through Sales Navigator, because that's really what it is. Like, and I've even used the automated tools years ago to do this in scale to see if it would work. And it just, rarely, if ever, produce the results in our industry. In other industries, it can be very beneficial if you're doing business with other people that are also getting more business because they're more active on LinkedIn. In our world, we are the, for lack of a better word, the aggressors. We're the one reaching out, trying to connect with shippers. Shippers are rarely reaching out to find brokers and carriers through LinkedIn.
Yeah. Agreed. Oh man, there's some spammy LinkedIn stuff. One of the last things I had on LinkedIn, love to see someone's work history, how long they've been there.
Yeah.
Let you know, like if someone's really new in a position, you're going to treat that conversation differently than if they've been there for 6 years, right? You're going to be kind of guiding them through a lot of
yes.
stuff.
Yes. And here's the other value, right? The other value I think with LinkedIn, and this is real close to like a company's website for freight brokerage. Again, shippers aren't typically Googling freight brokers to find us. So it's like SEO and websites don't typically create large traffic of leads for any company of any size because just the nature of how we work, right? But what almost always happens is if you call a prospect that you've not talked to and you have a good conversation, they're going to check to see if you are who you said you were, right? And where's the most logical place to see somebody professionally in their resume? They go right to LinkedIn. When I am prospecting all day consistently, my LinkedIn searches go up significantly because everybody I talk to is looking at my LinkedIn profile to see a little bit more about me. And to go one step further, we talked about this on that other podcast this week on things you can do that are actually valuable content that help you get more customers. If you have a niche like Steven, for example, right, like say it's in, you know, processed meat or right, maybe it's in bulk, whatever, right? If you're posting relevant content that is original to you, like an original thought, that helps this prospect get a window into you, which is valuable. And also, if they see that you're posting things that are interesting to them, they know you're really tied into this niche. That helps build trust. So like I am very careful in how I curate what my LinkedIn profile looks like based on what I'm doing, because I know the people I'm reaching out to are looking back at it to see more about me. Yeah. And I think that is something that you should be aware of when you're just doing any type of business development.
Absolutely. I got to get on LinkedIn more often, man. I haven't, I probably got like 50 inbox messages right now, but I'll get on there. Yeah. All right. Our last question, speaking of CRMs, someone asked, what CRM systems are the best for freight brokers? My generic answer is going to be that they all do pretty much the same thing, and take some demos, figure out which one is the most like user-friendly to you. So I'll name a couple, right? Like Salesforce, HubSpot, Zoho, Pipedrive, Shipper CRM from Freight Caviar, right? That's a specific one to freight brokers. And your TMS might have a CRM built into it as well. But what my recommendation is, the things that are important to you as a freight broker, make sure that you can easily track them. And you can, the way that you like to, you know, take calls, write down notes, make sure you can do that very easily. So you should be able to add custom fields. You should be able to change your view, customize it, so you're seeing the relevant information for you. Cost is a big thing as well. Are you paying for something that has way more stuff than you need? Or is there a cheaper option that might be a better fit for you? But I personally use HubSpot, I have for a number of years. You and I have taken a look at Shipper CRM and its beta version. And I know Paul's doing good stuff with that and should be doing more this year. What do you think? Anything to add?
I guess they're similar. The only things I would add, like I think it's important to be able to integrate your email with your CRM. I think that's very important because yeah. business is happening two ways, email and phone. And the thing that I feel is really important is if I'm going to talk to Nate as my prospect, when I pull his contact card up in HubSpot, I don't want to just see my notes from my calls with him. I want to see every email he's ever sent me that I might have missed or just forgot about. So it's top of mind while I'm talking to you. The thing that gets really difficult is like, if I'm talking to you and I got to put your email address in my Outlook, see what you've emailed me, then look back here at what my notes were, like it gets very disjointed. So that I think is really important, as well as it's really more how you use the tool and the cost, right? Like you want to be able to adjust the fields to know where each prospect is in their stage, from I've never talked to them, I've talked to them, to we're bidding, to they're a customer. That's your final, right? Yep. And then you also want a qualitative, like hot, medium, or cold. So you know throughout the year, like who really you want to make sure you're still touching frequently, who less frequently, and the most infrequently. And then finally, the most important aspect that I use is, though, making sure you set your follow-up calls when you finish this call. Because now what you're doing is creating your own schedule in the future that you don't have to worry about. It's easier to do when you're in the moment than try to think about it later. And it saves tremendous time sorting through leads every day, deciding who you're going to call.
Yep.
Create a list, work your all the way through it. Schedule every follow-up. As soon as you mark whether that call was no answered or notes for a successful call, when you'll be calling them back. Yep. And as you do this, it snowballs and you've created your schedule into the future.
No point in paying for something that you're not going to actually use effectively. So,
for sure.
Sweet. All right. Great questions. Keep sending them our way. Final thoughts, Mr. Kowalski.
Whether you believe you can or believe you can't, you're right.
And until next time, go Bills. That wraps up this episode of Freight 360. Check out the show notes for links to anything that we've referenced on this episode. And make sure to visit us online at freight360.net to see our entire library of episodes, videos, blogs, and more.
And make sure to check us out on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel for daily and weekly tips and content. And if you'd like your question answered on the show, fill out the Contact Us form on our site, and we'll see you next week.